Hello and welcome to episode 16 of the Playthrough Podcast and the start, just for Mads, of series 6 of our humble show. Of course, it's a podcast where four strapping young men play through modern and middle-aged games and talk about them.
And that's count the stuff, apparently. Part.
What was that? And, what was that, Mr. K?
And count stuff, apparently. That's what we like to do.
Numbers are important.
Four middle-aged men here playing one game in five episodes right now on episode number 16 of the end series of something. Hi,
as
listeners.
As a software developer, though, yeah, I would have thought you'd be into numbers.
I get enough numbers at work, mate.
Okay. should we ban numbers for... I'd love to see if we could go through this episode without saying another number. Act.
That's going to be a tough.
Scene.
One.
Yeah, probably impossible. Anyway, I'm joined, as always. You interrupted my intro there. I had it all planned out. I'm joined, as always, by four. Three.
Oh, God.
Three, the usual three. Jim.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
That all went well, didn't it?
We got there in the end, didn't we? I'm just trying to work out how old I am, though.
See, you're an expert hoster now, and you've handed the reins over to me for my game, and I've made a complete mess of it.
I'm just kicking back now. You're just there for the ride now.
As the kids will say, you're chilling like a villain.
Absolutely. But I'm on the OJ tonight, though. Overindulged at the weekend, and I'm detoxing this week. So I'm on the OJ.
Very nice. Looks like a nice strength squash. Yeah. Mads, how's it going? You're kind of semi-clothed, I see.
Yes. It's very hot here, so for your sake, I'm clothed from the middle and up, right?
Oh, yeah. That's always because... good. And he is sitting down, listeners, which is a relief.
Yeah.
we don't, there's things that we don't need to see. And Andy Gilmore.
Hello. Good evening.
Are you well?
Yeah, great. Yeah, very well, thank you.
It's been no time at all since we last caught up. A week, in fact, which leads me to announce to our listeners that this is going to be a little bit different, this series. Normally, we've settled into a nice two, occasionally three weekly recording pattern, a playthrough, in the 7 months we've been doing this. But Mads felt, after playing through, Mads was the first one to complete Act 1 of Kentucky Route Zero, which we're going to be talking about in a little while. And Mads felt that it would be a good one, actually, to record a short, we say short, the idea is a shorter episode than usual on each act. And I think it was a good idea, mate.
Yeah, I think it's going to work well. So we can all have all our theories out about what we think is actually going on in this game, and then we can listen back later on and find out just how wrong we were. It's going to be good.
Yeah, exactly. And having played it now, of course, like we all have, I think it was a good idea. I do agree that there is a lot to cover. And maybe some stuff would have got lost if we'd have done two acts at once. So we're going to try and explain what happened in act one, and then we're going to give our predictions.
Try being the word.
As to what happened.
I'm going to listen to Mads and yourself then to see if you two figured it out.
Well, this is it. I'm absolutely delighted that we're going to do it episode by episode or act by act, because there's half a chance that I might get towards the end of the game and have at least an inkling as to what's been happening the whole time.
Yeah, your guess may well be as good as mine.
Oh, yeah.
So let's have a quick run round. Has anyone been up to anything exciting in the past week that our listeners don't already know? Jim, other than watching England lose, have you been up to anything exciting?
Apart from the football, after saying, on the last time we recorded about putting the Xbox away, I've got it out. It's in the back room, so like the least dusty room, and it's out. She's just there.
I can see it.
Just there. But I've got the PlayStation stood up next to it. It's just an absolute monstrosity, isn't it? ugly.
The Series X looks tiny next to it.
It does, yeah. I was just thinking, if those two games consoles had a fight, who would win?
Do you know what? I fancy the Series X.
I think I'd put my money on the Series X, definitely. Yeah.
The Series X is the Mike Tyson of consoles. It's compact and strong.
Yeah.
Compared to PS5, agree, at least.
Yeah. It's those angles, PS5, isn't it? I think those flaps have come off on the PS5 within seconds. I just exposed the innards, but yeah, apart from
that's just fighting dirty.
But apart from playing Forza on it, I've not really done much else.
Yeah, Andy, anything good happening in the Gilmore? You've had a shave.
I have, yeah. This is it. I'm desperately clinging on to it. It's even for Scotland, it's getting quite hot at the moment. So I was starting to overheat with
16 degrees.
Probably it was into double figures at least. I know that much. Oof. So it was time. I was starting to overheat on my face. So I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to get. I'll probably regret it in a couple of days' time. I've had a beard for the best part of probably 2 or 3 years, I think, and then it was just. In a fit of rage the other morning, I actually took a set of clippers to it that had been in my shaving bag for the last 2 or 3 years. And as you'd fully expect, I got about halfway through it and they ran out of battery. So then I had to come downstairs and ask my wife if it was okay if I could have another half hour before I was ready, because I had to go and put the clippers back on charge. But thankfully, I managed to finish it off. So it's but as you know, Chris and I, we've got our, well, a significant birthday rapidly approaching, so this is just my desperate attempt to cling on to my last few weeks of youth. Anything that can postpone it. It's so it's a shave this week. It'll be Botox the week after, I think, and then whatever else. I'll probably get a personal trainer the week after that.
Midlife crisis.
Rapidly approaching, yeah. The week after that, there'll be a convertible sports car parked out in the driveway.
Page 3 model, or are you going to stop?
I'm working on it.
Car? Okay, that's good for now.
I'm hoping my wife's got me one for my birthday, but I think that's maybe asking too much.
does Mrs. Gilmore listen to this?
Not that I'm aware of, but...
we can say anything we want, that
guy. We could, but then the smart thing to do would be just to listen and not say anything, and I'm probably giving away far too much here, so... nothing too significant. We played a wee bit of Wreckfest through our multiplayer lobby, because at long last, we've actually been trying to do it for the last, six weeks?
Yeah, a couple of months.
But for whatever reason, there was a delay. It was supposed to, I think, be a feature on launch, the cross-gen play, not cross-platform, sadly, but cross-gen play. And there was a couple of updates that said it would be covered in that, and it wasn't, but it was. The most recent one, which I think was about a week ago, does now allow it. So we have successfully tried a game that involved a couple of PS4 players and a couple of PS5 players, and it's a good game to play on multiplayer.
Is it good fun?
Really good, yeah, it's good. I think definitely one of these ones where if you can have 6 or 7 of you, it's very easy to join public lobbies anyway, but if you could have a private one, it's much more fun,
it's
I think.
It's always better with mates, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's just interesting, actually. It's quite telling. So we were playing it. There was one of the guys that was on the PS4, 3 of us that were on the PS5, and it's very interesting because he actually, the PS4 player, ducked out a wee bit earlier in the evening, leaving just 3 PS5 players on. And it was very telling how much quicker we were able to get into a race each time because of the loading times.
I was just going to ask, was the difference in loading speeds to see the platform noticeable?
Very. Yeah, so each time that we would click ready, it would basically go straight to showing you as ready. Yeah. And then it would show the PS4 player as loading for
loading.
The best part of maybe 30 seconds, 40 seconds, something like that. So it does make a difference.
And Matt?
Yeah.
Anything exciting going on?
Nah, gaming-wise, playing a lot of Half-Life for the RA Game Club. Really, really enjoying that. It's been great getting back to Half-Life. And, just that and a bit of a Kentucky Route Zero. So, and not a lot of Kentucky Route Zero because we decided on only playing the first act, so for the first episode.
Yeah, and tantalizingly short. Half-Life's good, though, no? I've really got into it.
It's brilliant, mate. Brilliant.
Yeah. Almost near the end of it now. So tune into the Retro Asylum. If you listen to this and you don't listen to the Retro Asylum, please do. RetroAsylum.com or from all your favourite podcast outlets. Mads and I are over there talking old games, not modern or middle-aged games, positively old games just like us.
And the site should actually work again now. You just said the URL of the site that it's been dead all day, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but thanks to the wonderful technical skills of Mads, it is back online.
For a little while, because it's still not safe, so the same attack can happen again. I haven't had time to actually fix it.
Don't say that, Mads. They'll be at it again now.
Yeah, just let them. I don't really
care. Russians are out to get us.
Well, it'll narrow it down. We'll know they listen to this podcast as well. So
that's true.
Nets floating in.
It's one of 12 people.
Yeah, that's it, right? It must be one of us.
So for me, I chickened out of Resi 7 the other evening. My big boy's pants fell off absolutely in a big way at the start of... No one in this forum has played it, I don't think, but for anyone who's listening who has played it, the start of chapter two, when you get into the main house with the family, OMG. I just couldn't take it. It's literally terrifying with that headset on. It is horrible. Terrific.
Oh, I need to play it.
It's brilliant, but it's horrific. It's too much. It was too much. I am going to give it one more go and just see if I can cope. I'd love to play it in VR because when it worked, it's brilliant.
What is it that's so scary? Is it the atmosphere or the jump scares or the sort of both? Or
there's one stage at the start of chapter two where. Do you know anything about Resi 7?
Only the demo. So I played the full, well, not the full demo. I played the demo to completion, basically, where you, at the end of the demo, so I remember at the start, you're in like a kitchen, you see like a fridge and stuff, and then the demo finishes where you find like a little hatch and you go through the hatch.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the demo. So there's a bit where the demo where you're going up the stairs and you've got some mannequins that sort of are there facing one way. Yeah. 1 minute you go past, turn around, and then another way.
Yeah,
and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. I'm guessing that's right at the start of the game. I'm guessing
that's chapter one. Yeah, yeah, that's not too bad. In chapter two, you end this situation where something happens at the end of chapter one. You come to, and you are surrounded by this family. This kind of really weird family, and they're trying to feed you human parts, and you end up wriggling free, and the guy, the main guy, the family is after you, so you kind of glimpse him, and then he's shouting, and you can hear the footsteps with the 3D audio behind you, and if you look behind, it's horrific, it's so scary. And like, you know, as I said last week, I'm not really one of those people who gets bothered by scary films or scary games, but I had to send it off. I was literally petrified.
I think I've got the VR game for you then. I just bought for my Oculus Quest 2 the new Sam & Max game recently. So it's called This Time It's Virtual, I think. So
yeah, that's the game. That's the kind of game you want to play, though.
Yeah. Or Moss 2. Nice
cartoon.
Moss 2 just got announced, didn't it? Play that. That's a nice game.
Yeah.
The first one's a lovely little game. Play that.
Mm.
Yeah, I've still got yours, haven't I? I need to play that.
Yeah, it's a nice little game.
I'm going to continue with Resi 7, but it won't be in VR, probably. Yeah. Anyway, right. Shall we get into Kentucky Route Zero?
Oh, yes.
Let's.
Okay, bit of background. Kentucky Route Zero was developed by a company called Cardboard Computer, which consists largely of two guys, Jake Elliott and Tamás Kemenci. And apologies if I've just completely bullied the pronunciation of his name. Tamás Kemenci, I think, and Jake Elliott. Two guys who met in art school sometime in the mid-2000s and started talking about games. They collaborated with another friend of theirs on a surrealist redux remix of Colossal Cave Adventure, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They are a big fan of classic adventure games, both text and graphic. And they didn't release their remix of Colossal Cave Adventure. It was used in an installation art exhibition, some kind of trippy surrealist remix of a text adventure, which is pretty cool. I don't think it's available anywhere. If it is, I'd love to know, because I'd love to have a look at it. But that's how that was really their start of their game making time. Jake Elliott particularly did make some smaller games in his fledgling career. He's mostly, I think they both worked on a very strange but compelling point-and-click adventure called A House in California. I think I might have mentioned that last week. That is available on the web. If you go onto Cardboard Computer's website, you can, and you go scroll down on their blog, you can get access. That's free to play, and it's a more traditional point-and-click with verbs and everything, but strange verbs, like you can remember things or you forget. Rather than pick up, it's remember or catch or play with or forget. So, yeah, experimental stuff in the point-and-click space. In 2011, they released a game called Ruins, where you play a dog running through a dreamlike landscape, and there's narrative points within. I've downloaded it. I've only had a very quick go at it. Again, it's free, and it's available on their website. You can just download it. It looks quite interesting. But you can definitely see from playing those early games where the thinking was in terms of this rather abstract, surrealist kind of approach to games. They were joined on this one by a guy called Ben Babbitt, who did the composing for the... He did the composing, so he did the music. He didn't do the sound design. That was done by Jake and Tamas. And Ben also formed a bluegrass band called the Bedquilt Ramblers, who record the bluegrass style music, not just in Act 1, but they pop up throughout the five acts. Act 1 was released on the 7th of January 2013. It's come out on most platforms over the years. I don't know where it initially came out, but it's popped up on itch and it's available on Steam and all the usual digital platforms now. And it is now, of course, I think we've all played the TV edition, which is all five acts bundled together with the various interludes all in one nice package. And that was bundled by Annapurna. That was published by Annapurna, the TV edition.
Yeah, I think mine is actually called the PC edition. So,
is it? Okay. On Steam. Well, maybe the TV edition's only on consoles.
Yeah, perhaps.
When you start, Mads, do you have a wheel where you can select which act you want to?
I can.
Yeah, same.
And
I've played on Switch.
Out of interest, did anyone back it? Because it was a Kickstarter, wasn't it, originally?
It was a Kickstarter, yeah. Yeah, 2011 Kickstarter. Can anybody remember it from back then?
No, I can't.
Yeah, I remember it from back then, but I didn't back it, actually. I think I found out about it after the Kickstarter had run. And started reading about it, and I've been interested in playing it ever since, but I've never actually done it. So
it was one of the first video game Kickstarters, not the first, but it was certainly amongst that first wave. And they raised a princely sum of $8,500 or there or thereabouts.
Yeah, okay.
Which, given what some companies seek on Kickstarter now, is quite modest. And they use that money to license the various assets they need to license to make the game, and also to pay the band to record the soundtrack.
Cool.
That's how they use that $8,500. Influences wise, it was one of the first, it was, I think, certainly one of the first video game projects to be delayed as well. Because Act 1 was due to be released in autumn 2011, and it wasn't released until January 2013. So they do have a history of things being delayed. It's quite funny. On some of the interviews from around the time of the release of Episode 1, Jake Elliott says that he was hoping to release the acts monthly, but instead he decided all five of them would be released over the course of 12 months. 12 months.
Okay.
Yeah. 7 years it took to release all of them. Their blog on their website is still live, so you can go back now and you can follow the history and the many, many apologies that the guys have issued over the years, because things started off months late and then it turned to years late.
It's impressive, though, that they stuck with it and got it released. 7 years, that's got
to
be tough.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Fair play to anyone that started with the first act and then had to wait 7 years to finish the story.
Well, you only have to think about how gaming changed between 2011 when they announced the Kickstarter to 2020 when they released Act 5. And the fact that the thing endured and carried on getting great reviews is probably a testament to how good it is.
And it's perfect timing for us to start playing it now then, because it would be really tough to have to wait for a year between each episode.
Or seven.
Yep.
Yeah. There was 5 years between Act 4 and Act 5, I think.
Okay.
That's a long time. What else have I got here? So influences-wise, narratively influenced heavily by the TV work and film work of David Lynch.
Oh, yeah, that's very apparent.
Yeah. Twin Peaks in particular has a very strong... They're really into that kind of abstract kind of filmmaking and storytelling, installation art. The novels of people like Tennessee Williams and the American kind of tragedy dramas of the 1950s. Gabriel Garcia Marquez, who I wonder if that was the inspiration for the name Marquez in the game. Colombian novelist who writes that kind of the small town but quite surreal kind of novels. Art style probably won't surprise anyone to know that they are big fans of Another World. Eric Chahi's games are very influential for them, and the game does share an art style. Definitely, it did immediately recall the likes of Another World and Flashback when I started playing it.
Especially Another World, actually.
You can really see Another World in it, can't you? The kind of those polygons, the rough polygon.
The colours as well.
Pastel.
Well.
Yeah. The big fans of point-and-click games, in particular, they cite Siberia and The Dig as influences. Again, more in tone and in feel rather than in gameplay. They made a big deal over the fact that they didn't design puzzles for this game, they designed mysteries. And that was the key difference between a traditional point-and-click game where to progress through the story, you are solving one puzzle after the next and you gate progression by having puzzles for the player to solve. There are no puzzles as such in Kentucky Route Zero. They say there are plenty of mysteries for you to try and just wrap your head around. So deliberately done. And there's a really interesting talk that Jake Elliott gave to the GDC in 2013, which does, so you can go on there with no spoilers because at that point Act 1 had only just released. So it's completely spoiler-free and it's about 20 minutes long. It's really interesting about how they go about designing a game just literally based around mystery and narrative. It is quite interesting. And really, that's it. That's all I had really on the influence. That's all I wanted to say. So
they're definitely influenced by one more genre as well, because text adventure games is heavily influential here as well.
Yeah. In fact, there are elements of this which are text adventures.
Yeah, completely.
Isn't there
really? I love that. I was so happy the first time I stumbled across that.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into it. Who wants to try and summarize the story?
That's a good one, Chris.
We all know who's going to do it.
I didn't think anybody would, so let's not even try. Let's work our way through Act 1 and see what we can get from it and what we all made of it.
Yeah.
So I'm interested just off the bat, Andy and Jim in particular, because I know probably this is, you know, we're a bit like disco again in terms of, you know, we're back outside your comfort zones. What were your kind of expectations going in, Andy? First impressions when you initially fired it up and you had that scene in the petrol station?
Yeah, nothing by way of any expectations, because I literally knew nothing about it. So in a similar vein to Disco Elysium, very much going with an open mind. I guess maybe what caught me on the hop was that I didn't realise it was going to get maybe as abstract and surreal as what it does so early on. I thought that might be at least a little bit further into the game, because initially you arrive there at this gas station or petrol station, and I absolutely just loved the whole aesthetic of that. It's just something that I've got like a real soft spot for. I just love all sorts of Americana. I don't know if you've ever seen it or not. There's, you know, like these Taschen tabletop, like coffee table books you get. There's a company called Taschen that make them. And they're sort of, they've got all different ones. I've got one called Roadside America. And it's basically it's absolutely brilliant. Just full page spreads of various, all sorts of things, but primarily focusing on things, as the name would suggest, you know, roadside diners,
petrol stations,
various landmarks, anything of sort of significance, the sort of things that you can only find in the States. They seem to have this fascination that they can't just have a location. It has to have a claim attached to it as well. So the first thing I thought when I saw this is that you can imagine pulling into this and it would have a sign outside saying Kentucky's largest horse head or something like this. And it's just got such a cool style to it. I absolutely loved it. But then it was only, and then right away, obviously you meet your little dog as well. And the guy sat over on the bench, Joseph. So Joseph is obviously Joseph. You've got the choice as to which you go for with regards to the dog, whether you go for a male or female dog. I went for a female dog called Blue.
Me
too. So there was an initial part of it that I thought, I like this. I loved the stillness. It was a really nice opening scene stood there, and you could hear the trucks rumbling, and you can actually hear and see the trucks rumbling by in the background and everything. And I thought, I thought maybe I can really get into this, and maybe this is something I'm really going to like. And no idea where it was going to go, but as we'll get on to sort of fairly quickly, obviously, there was a couple of incidents and I thought, okay, I'm really going to have to sort of pay attention here, maybe more than what I'd been paying up until that point. Because up until that point, I'd really just been kind of coasting along and enjoying some of the visuals. And there's some lovely music very early on as well. So,
You got to be careful. Don't pay too much attention. Just let it all wash on over you. I mean, you can play it again if you want all of the details.
But this
is an experience. I mean, I would say don't write stuff down. Don't try to remember everything. Just go with the flow.
I think this is it. And I think this is maybe one of these things that, because I don't play this type of game, and it was exciting with Disco Elysium, is that, and it tends to be like maybe the same with films and programs as well, is that I get uncomfortable if I feel like I'm losing track of where something's going, or I'm not understanding what's happening. Panic's completely the wrong word for it, but it's more the case that I think I need to be paying more attention here, or you know, I've missed something important. Whereas in actual fact, you're only 5 minutes into the game. Of course, you're not going to know what's happening at that point, and there's a reason why they're either trying to sort of confuse or mislead or whatever it is they're trying to do at that point. Hopefully there's a reason for that further down the line. And even if there's not, then maybe it's maybe I don't need to understand every single thing that I'm seeing or hearing or reading.
Did you actually watch Twin Peaks?
No. So this is
okay.
This is,
so you definitely again, don't you don't want to watch Twin Peaks and think that you need to understand everything that's going on, because then you're not going to last one episode.
I think it's just
an experience. Just take it in, take it all in, and then watch it again.
And then you'll get all
the other details. And that's the brilliant stuff, the brilliant thing about this kind of narrative.
I think it's something I'm definitely getting better about in later life, is that I definitely sort of have a personality where I've got quite a sort of literal personality, I think. And that tends to be what I'm interested in and kind of what I gravitate towards. And so if there's anything that I either suspect or hear that is slightly out there, I tend to avoid it, to be honest. And I've obviously missed out on some of the best TV and films and games as a consequence. So at least through this, we're addressing the gaming side of things. So it's, I will do that. I will do it in the exact same way as I did with the Disco Elysium. I will just kind of go with the flow and see where it gets me.
Yeah,
that's it.
So I plan on playing all of these episodes twice. Because the first time you play through them, it's just the experience, and you get a lot out of that. And then the next time, you get just as much enjoyment, or I do at least, by figuring out, that's actually a reference to what's going to happen later on. Ooh, we see this already here. And I mean, I just played only the first 5-10 minutes of the game again today. I wanted to play the entire thing again before we spoke, but I had to fix a web server that was attacked. But I just played the first 10 minutes, and already I found some stuff that really intrigued me, because that just references all the way to the end of episode one already there in the beginning. Yeah. So this is a game that's got infinite replayability for me.
It's like an onion, isn't it? I think every time you play I played it twice, and you certainly do start to peel back the layers, I think, on subsequent playthroughs. Jim, how are you when you open it up and you see, you know, the theatrical influences straight away are obvious. You get an act one, scene one, Equus Oils. It feels like a theatre play.
Definitely.
Looks like a set, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're set a stage in a play, and it's pretty clear straight away, isn't it, when you go inside the building that there's something going off, something's not right, which obviously you'll come into when we sort of delve a bit more in. But the little bit of reading I did on the game, and like you said, it's a point and click. I still don't see that. For me, a point and click has always been something like Broken Sword. Which this is totally not that sort of game.
It's not even a point and click on the Switch, because you have direct control over Conway, don't you? Conway's the main character. Okay.
On the PC, it feels very much like a point and click.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It plays more like Grim Fandango on the consoles.
And I've been playing it handheld, and definitely I'm going to try it on the big screen, like you suggested, Mads, rather than handheld. It just, the text is very small, and it does look nice, but I do think you lose some of that
Yeah, you'll lose a lot of the details because the sprites or the characters are very, very small on the screen, actually, compared to everything that they want to show off. And you, there's so much... I mean, I don't know if it's rotoscoped, but you said it is like another world. The character animation is very good. And all of those slightly crooked angles on everything just really stand out when you get it on the big screen.
Yeah. I think you do get more of that kind of fantastical, kind of surrealist vibe from when you see it bigger. I haven't played it both. I played it once through in handheld, once through in docked. And you definitely do get more from the visuals, I think, when they're bigger. You see more stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I've got it on the PS5 and then obviously as a consequence playing it on the 55-inch TV that I sit probably too close to. And so there's a couple scenes later on that were particularly pretty amazing, to be honest, when they were happening, because you're sort of properly absorbed in it and surrounded by it.
I don't think I'm going to go through replay the axe until I finish the game, because very much like Firewatch, that was another game that I'd sort of never played, very sort of narrative and, you know, story driven and text heavy. I didn't want to change the decisions that I'd made in the game in case it had an impact later on.
I'm actually making the exact same choices again because I don't want to do that either. Then I can play it a third time later on if I want.
That's exactly what I did.
Okay.
Yeah. So you do have the way the dialogue works here is that you do very often throughout the game get choices in dialogue. The way they designed the dialogue system is very different from a typical adventure game, in that normally with adventure games you get like a kind of spoke dialogue system where you can go through each of the options, you end up back at a menu and you basically go through them all. It's not very realistic as to how one converses in real life. It'd be hilarious if we did speak like that, but we don't. They went for a much more natural dialogue style. And Jake Elliott talks about this thing about linearity and how they embrace linearity. The narrative is very, very linear, he says. So your dialogue choices won't change the story almost in any way, although he does hint at something much later about how what you do in the early acts can influence something later. I don't know what that is. But what he said was that he said, imagine it's like an actor getting a script. Your choices are almost like the actor giving an inflection to the words or saying them in a particular tone. Mm-hmm. So what you'd say will influence how other characters see you and how the world sees you, but it won't influence the story.
Mm. Right, which is, okay.
Again, really interesting.
So what you said about the conversation system, the how you speak to people, that the conversations are actually closed down where it's natural to stop talking instead of you can just going through all of the different options. That also means that if you want the entire story here, you need to be aware of that, because when he's done talking, you can just click on the character and talk to him again and say something new this time. I mean, it's not like in a classical point and click where you have these options and maybe if you say A, then that'll lead to B and B will lead to C, and then you can go through and check them all off and make sure you said everything and heard everything. That's not how it works in this game. So just go back and talk to them again. Maybe talk to them again immediately if you think, that other option, I'd like to ask about that as well.
Yeah.
And don't the completionists in me with regards to that kind of conversation trees, or what they call them in point and clicks, makes me want to go through all of the options. So you have to live with that. That's not possible in this game, because if you talk to a guy, you choose one out of three options, then the next time you talk to him, maybe those two options are gone now. So
I'm still recovering from Disco Elysium, from farming that last 5 XP I needed, where I had to click through literally every single option. So now, I'm happy just to choose one thing and move on each time.
Exactly. This is not that game. This is you need to play this more like an experience, right?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, and it also lends pace to it as well, because you have a conversation, you take your choices through that conversation, and you move on.
It fits the storytelling, the Lynch-esque dialogue perfectly, that your conversation comes to an end and you just stand there looking at each other and, okay, maybe there's something else we need to talk to, because that's how a Lynch film is supposed to be, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we quickly find out that we're Conway.
You didn't ask me how I felt about the game.
How did you feel about the game?
I bloody loved it, mate. I loved it. This is brilliant.
I don't want to know how you feel about the whole thing. What were your first impressions? Because I imagine...
So I was completely sold from the get-go. I loaded it up. I saw the graphics already there with the giant horse head behind the oil station. You could see that this was going to be weird and strange and funny. And then the very first conversation, you talked to this hip... cool old man sitting in a nice Victorian armchair in between two gas pumps and saying that
as one does,
saying that oh yeah, he kind of likes this job. I've got a degree in something and I wrote a few publications, but this is cool as well.
So yeah,
you just know this is going to be brilliant. So I loved it.
Yeah.
I mean the conversational style, the Lynch-esque conversations just hooked me immediately, and it never let go. Yeah. Because it's just good all the way through this act.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, my first impression was it looks great, it sounds amazing, the ambient sound, the sound of the Interstate 65, which is where you've pulled over into this petrol station. Yeah. Hearing the trucks go past and the tractor go past and the crickets. It really is so evocative.
Yeah.
Of You can be there. You put yourself there. I mean,
we can even almost smell it. It's
that
it is.
Good.
It is really evocative, and it looks superb. Absolutely, I love the art style. I absolutely love it. I think it looked amazing, and I had a big smile on my face. It probably didn't. I think the Joseph character probably didn't grab me in the same way that it did Mads.
Okay,
but yeah, the whole aesthetic was incredible. So the dog, Andy, you were blue. Jim?
Yep.
Homer.
Mads?
Blue.
So for me, it was just some dog.
Just some bastard. Dog.
You heartless beast.
just some dog. That was the
There's no I'm such thing.
I'm glad that we all... I love when you look at the dog and he says, an old hound in a straw hat. Both have seen better days.
Yes.
Nice. So the dog is your character's way of getting all of his inner dialogue out. At least if it's your friend. So
yeah.
So I would be talking to the dog whenever I could, because that would be that would mean that he could get all of his inner thoughts out and say what he really thought about the stuff he just people he just met and the stuff he just experienced.
Yeah. And it's actually quite important to just download in little bits of the story as well. It does. I think you do that in each scene. I mean, it's not explicit in any way. This game will never, ever be on the nose in terms of its storytelling, but it does fill in one or two gaps.
Yeah, it does. It does. And you can choose to do it, or you can choose not to do it. I mean, it's nothing that you have to do. But I do. Yeah. I talk as much with my dog as possible.
Yes.
So we are Conway. We work for Lysette's Antiques. We have a job. We are delivering a package to a customer who lives on 5 Dogwood Drive. Conway doesn't know where Dogwood Drive is, so he pulls into this petrol station, gas station, to ask for directions. Joseph says, I can't remember whether he says it. Anyway, we end up down in the basement of the petrol
station. He says you need to get onto the Route Zero, so hence the name of the entire game, Kentucky Route Zero.
That's right. Yeah. He says in order to get to Dogwood Drive, you need to find Route Zero. Yeah. And we end up having to trip the electrics.
It's the computer, isn't it? I think there's an address in a computer that to get the computer up and running, you need to reset a circuit breaker.
Yep.
That's right. Exactly that. So we get Lamp. At this point.
Yes, I love that
did
reference.
Anybody,
chuckled at that.
Did you guys get the reference to Colossal Cave Adventure? In that you, and he says, it actually says get Lamp as well, doesn't it? Which is pretty cool. That is the command in all the classic adventure games and the text adventures. Normally in every single one, at some point you type get Lamp to get the lamp, which is very, very, very cool. I enjoyed that. We're down in the basement, and it's the first hint that there's something a little bit fantastical going on here, because sitting in the basement playing a game are Laura, Emily, Ben and Bob.
Yep.
They are the names of the band, the Bedquilt Ramblers, Ben Babbitt. And they're playing a strange sounding game involving maps and they can't hear you.
No.
Or they kind of can hear you, but they don't know that you're there.
Oh, yeah,
and what you say is an audible.
Mm. Yeah, they just totally ignore you, don't they? Yeah. And then you
at one point
you find their dice, don't you?
Yeah, so the dice drops off the table. You have to go and pick it up because they're blocking the way at this point. They're blocking the route to the breaker. So if you turn off your lamp, it glows in the dark, this dice. And again, aesthetics and graphics here are so cool with the lighting coming in from the surface.
So the whole turning off of the lamp also teaches us something about the gameplay already here that we're going to experience later on. And it tells us something about the story. I've got theories here already. I had that the very first time I played it when those guys disappear, because they do. So they sit there, they play their game, and they won't let you can't get past, you can't get to the circuit breaker. So you just have to try to talk to them and try to figure out what on earth they're doing. They're playing a game that involves highway maps and dice. That's all. And some pieces they can move around. And then at some point, so one of them says, I don't think you can win this. It says on the box, it's a tragedy. So I love that.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. They do say that, don't they?
And then as soon as you actually pick up the dice that they lost, they're gone.
They disappear.
When you turn on the light again. Stuff you see when you turn off the light is something happening in a parallel world or something along those lines.
Yeah, because that happens again later on, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a hint that there's something supernatural. Jake Elliott does say that this is a ghost story, but not in the traditional sense. Oh,
okay, that's good. I figured that much.
So what did you guys do with the dice? Did you keep it or did you put it back on the table?
I kept it.
I think.
I put it back.
I put it back as well.
Yeah.
I put it back. So, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, whether that has an impact on anything. But yeah, I put it back.
Yeah, funny thing, I actually wanted to put it back because I was curious to whether that would make them like reappear, come back into the game. But then again, this is I felt like I was playing an adventure game. This was the very beginning of me playing this game, so I thought, I might need this later on.
I've got to keep it in my inventory.
Yeah.
This game has no inventory, of course. Nope. No inventory of any kind. Yeah. Okay, so we trip the breaker. The lights come back on in the basement. We go back up to the surface, and we're greeted with the petrol station in all of its lit glory.
Yeah.
And the first of Ben Babbitt's beautiful ambient synth.
Yeah,
synth tracks here. It hits you hard. Well, it did me anyway.
I absolutely love synth music. So I stood outside, and I did as soon as I appeared out and that track came on. I didn't actually take another step. I just stood there
exactly
and listened to
that. Yeah, I did as well, and I did it again on the second go. It lasts for about 4 minutes. I just sat there.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely superb. We end up on Joseph's computer. A couple of strange messages. One of them, strangely, we log in as Joseph, but there is an email.
And how do we log in?
To Conway? Oh, we log in. Yeah, that's we ought to mention that. So Joseph says, I've forgotten my password. So I can't remember it. It goes like a short poem. So I'm thinking here, hang on a minute. This game is supposed to not be puzzles. I'm going to have to now go and puzzle out a password.
Yeah, he says it's one of those phrases that sums it all up.
Yeah.
Yes. So I was racking my brains, carefully selecting the choices that it gives you for the password. But of course, it doesn't matter what you input, everything is correct.
But you build a little poem.
You build a little poem.
Like 3 or 4 line poem, yeah. I love that.
The stars are fading, the moon's gone out, it's getting warmer or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I went for, again, this shows you how my brain works. I went for the most literal options that were there each time. So it was, I talk and hear him talking.
Mm.
It's late. It will only get later.
I love that.
So that's nice and poetic. No. I like it.
Yeah, that's it. And it is one of those phrases that sums it all up. Because I thought when he said one of those phrases that sums it all up, I didn't know if the options you were selecting at this point actually impacted. If it was going to be one of these ones where you kept getting failed login attempts until you... So I interpreted him saying one of those phrases that sums it all up. I was like, right, what sums up everything that's happened in the game so far? Which was, I've talked and heard him talking. It's late and it's only going to get later. So I was like, I've cracked it. This is great. I know how these games work.
I think I went a lot more surreal. I started with the same phrase, but then there was something about nobody heard the accident. And then in the end, you only... Breathe road or something like that. Breathe highway.
It's quite cool. Doesn't matter what you put, it's always right. You'll always get into the computer. But again, it's subverting the old genre tropes,
yes.
Because there's many, many adventure games where you have to try and puzzle out a password. This is not one of them. You can, it's playing with you a little bit in these early stages, I feel. On the computer, did anyone select games?
Yes. Yeah, I was just about to ask that. Yeah.
Yeah. Games is not real.
Yep. Yes. Yep.
And it says that about something else as well.
Yes. Yeah, it does.
Was this the address?
If you go into the address book, you can choose Route 0, you can choose 5 Dogwood Drive, and you can choose Marquess. And if you choose anything but Marquess, it'll say that it's not real.
It's not
so
real,
Route 0 is not real, and yeah.
Also, if you try and use Conway as your username to get into the computer, it says Conway is not real.
Yep. That's actually one of my theories as well. Oh, good.
You see, this is where I didn't do myself any favors by being sort of a genuine and honest person who was just borrowing somebody else's computer. I just went, he's giving me access to his computer to look up an address. So that's what I went for. I just went straight with the Marquez address and didn't try the other options.
Ooh,
than the games folder, of course.
Did you read the messages then?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, they're important as well for the story.
Okay.
Yeah, well, at least one of them are.
Yeah, because there's a message from Donald to Joseph. I've made a mistake there. I said it was a message from Donald to Conway, but it's not. Mm. It's a message from Donald to Joseph, isn't it? Talking about days past in the lab.
Yeah, with the Lola, Donald, Joseph, and Lula. Lula. Yeah.
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 And how he misses Lula those days, and how he wants Joseph to come to the cave and have fun with them because they found their Xanadu there.
Xanadu, yeah. Another reference to Colossal Cave there.
Yeah, or to what's happening later in this act, actually.
Yeah. So we find out that what do? We find out where from this we find the directions for Marquez's farmhouse, don't we?
Yeah. Yes. And then we go back outside and speak to Joseph.
Yeah.
That's right. And he says, "Oh, I've got a TV. She might like to watch TV. She's more of a reader, but she might like this old TV."
Yeah, it's her old TV, actually. That he borrowed at some point. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct. So we get vague directions. I think it says you go up Interstate 65, you turn left at the burning tree. Mm. It's just down there in front of the barn.
Yeah, so it's left at the ugly tree that's always on fire.
On fire. And it also goes into your journal at this point. So if you press it on switch, it's Y, or X, one of the two. And it kind of keeps a record of the directions in your little journal.
Yeah, I was actually kind of disappointed at that because I had started doing my...
I was so pleased to see that.
I was sitting there with pen and paper writing this stuff down myself with the directions, but
I did the same. I wrote it down. Yeah, that's why I've got it here because I did write it down, and I thought these are the sort of things that are probably going to come back and bite me in the backside if I don't do so, and I'm just going to be driving around the map for an hour trying to find where I was supposed to be going, and then as you say, you open the journal. Was in there. I thought that's fine. I don't need to write down every single direction.
So I was hoping for more of a homage to the old text adventure games there. So
but yeah,
no,
off you pop. Yeah. So we go onto the map, which is very very cool. So the map is your vehicle. So your map is how would you describe it? It's like a 2D like wireframe.
It's like almost like a London Underground map or something. That's what it reminded me of. I loved it.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. And again, you can hear the noises. Your vehicle is represented by a single wheel that you drive around the map. On my first playthrough, I went straight up and straight to the farmhouse.
Okay.
But you actually can go absolutely anywhere.
Yeah, and there's stuff to see.
On the map. And there's lots of stuff.
And you can't
see
it on the map. That's quite important, actually. There's initially almost nothing on the map. Some points, when you encounter them, they'll be written down on the map, and other points won't. So you need to remember where they were if you want to find them again. Like, did you go to the diner, for example? Or
went to the diner.
That's weird. That's some very surrealistic stuff.
I don't think I went to the diner.
Yeah. Did you guys, so Andy and Jim, you didn't see the diner?
I don't think I went to the diner.
How about the church? You went there?
Nothing at all. Okay. So it's because I wondered because I said this is obviously when I realized quite quickly that it did seem to be pretty unrestricted and you could go wherever you wanted. Mm. And I thought, I just had visions of me doing what I always do with games and disappearing off on a tangent and never actually getting to where I need to get to. So I put a note here saying podcast discipline kept me on the on the correct route. But it's just a really nice. I don't know what it is. There's something. I guess it would be the same if you're playing it on the Switch. At least is that there's something very satisfying about the way the controls. The way that you move around, it's got a really nice feel to it. It felt to me that, you know, when you're on a pinball table and you like you go up one of the rails or one of the chutes or something, that's what it feels like. It's really, really nice to play it. And also the other thing was I noticed was the depending on whether you're on the one of the interstates or one of the side roads, the road noise changes, doesn't it? Yeah. So you can hear either like big cars or just like a much quieter road with the odd car passing. It's a really, really nice effect.
Yeah, it's a nice attention to detail.
Yeah,
very good. So I see the church. Did you see the plane, Matt? The two guys pushing the plane? Yeah.
Yes, I saw that I did see the plane.
Yeah.
Mm. Where's that
so
about?
Weird. It's a comment about, I took it as, so it's these two guys who are pushing this plane and the wheels on the plane are wearing. And Conway makes a remark to say, oh, before long, they're going to be just dragging that plane across the ground. And you can just watch them pushing the plane off the screen. It takes about 3 minutes for them to push it off. And that's it, really. I mean, that's it. Yep.
Okay.
Each little thing is like a vignette. It's almost like a vignette of a very short little vignette of...
There are different kinds of points as well, stylistic or... maybe we should get to that when you get to the museum in a bit.
Yeah, we will do. Yeah. But and then they just end. Marquez Farmhouse, Act 1, Scene 2.
More numbers.
Again, another striking scene, isn't it? Absolutely beautiful stuff going on here. Really nice. It's now full on night, and we head up a trail towards the farmhouse, and as we do, the camera zooms in slowly. It's really nice shot. Again, this is the kind of stuff they're well into, all this kind of weird camera work on filmmaking. So the camera just zooms in really slowly as you climb up the hill, blocks out the truck and the dog and everything, and you're left at the top of the hill with just a close-up shot of the farmhouse and Conway making his way.
Yeah, initially you can't see the top of the hill at all. You can't see the farmhouse out of the little graveyard up there. And then when you walk... When you get closer, all of a sudden comes like out of the mist. It's just fits the atmosphere so perfectly.
Yeah. Before you went up the hill, did you hang around at the bottom?
So I think I spoke to Blue first, my dog.
Yeah, I spoke to the dog.
Yes. So did you see somebody walk in front of the camera?
No.
No.
Yeah. So this is...
Only later on.
So, yes. So remind me, what's the name of the band?
Bedquilt Ramblers.
Bedquilt Ramblers. I need to remember. I forgot that. Sorry. Yeah. So basically, I stood there and I was just listening to the ambient noises, the insects, and all this sort of stuff. And I was chatting to Blue, and literally right across the camera that fills the whole screen, somebody walks across the camera, and yes, exactly. And it went from me standing there, really just enjoying this nighttime scene, to suddenly feeling very, this quite sort of ominous presence. And I thought, I thought this game's going to go in a completely different direction, or it took it in a different direction to what I thought we were going in at that point.
Could have been the G-Man.
Yeah, could have been the G-Man. It's a Half-Life reference.
Yep. It made me feel very uncomfortable from that point onwards. And especially as you say, you go up towards a graveyard as well.
That is interesting, actually, because... This game isn't a scary game. It's not a horror game, but it consistently made me feel just a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. I think
the whole time, pretty much.
It's that strong, there's a strong death theme, isn't there? It's everywhere.
But
loss and death.
It's so surreal. Paranormal.
It's not something that ever scared you, is it? I mean,
it's not scary. It's just a feeling.
I definitely wasn't happy at this point.
No, exactly. It made me feel uneasy, I think, is probably the best way to describe it. Just something's not right.
It made me feel curious, I think.
Yeah.
I wanted to figure out what was going on. I still do want to figure out what's going on. I've got no idea.
Yeah, that is, none of us seen that, Andy, so it just shows you there's a poor four people, and you can have a unique experience. That's really cool. At the top of the hill, there's a graveyard, and there are three headstones. One of those headstones has the name Marquez on it, and this is the house of a lady who we know is someone called Marquez. So we don't know too much else other than the fact that the headstones are there. We found out a little bit more later, but the headstones are there. We pass through it. We head into the farmhouse, where we are met by Weaver Marquez, who tells us a little bit about herself in a very, very odd way. The lady has a very odd conversational style, doesn't she?
She continuously asks three questions, and then you can yeah. choose to answer one of them, and then you go on. So you can't answer all of them. And in the end, she knows everything anyway, and she knows why you're there. You don't have to tell her that you're looking for the zero. She knows that.
So. Yeah, she knows your name. She never asks your name, but she knows that you're Conway. She calls you Conway at one point.
And asks you to start listening, start paying attention. It's time. Yeah, it's time does. You start paying attention.
Yeah, exactly. And
did you offer to sort out her television?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Mm. So I just wondered whether that was like a dialogue choice that you could probably miss out on.
I think setting up the television and figuring out that it's broken is a very important part of the story, because that leads you on to Shannon, her cousin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things she talks about, Weaver, her name is Weaver, isn't it? Weaver Marquez. Yep. One of the things Weaver talks about is the fact that she had to borrow a lot of money to build the house. It was a house, they demolished the house.
Her parents had to borrow a lot of money.
Her parents did, yeah. They had to borrow a lot of money. There was a house on the site, which I get the impression is going to be quite important. They demolished the house, they built this new house, so they had to borrow a lot of money. Yep. And one of the big themes of this game is financial hardship and debt.
Yeah.
It's common throughout this whole episode and this act, and I think it carries on throughout the subsequent acts. What we got to remember is when this game was conceptualized in 2011, we'd just come off the back of the big financial crisis. Yeah. And the Midwest, this part of the United States, was hit particularly hard. And Kentucky was hit really, really badly by the global recession. So it's going to be interesting how that kind of plays out over the various acts, given the gap in time of development. Mm. But in this episode, it's really, really prominent that the characters have suffered both personal and financial hardship. There's loads of mentions of it. And she talks about it in this conversation. But yet, she turns on the TV, doesn't she? And when she does, she tells us to watch. Mm. And as we do, the back of the barn kind of melts away. The back of the farmhouse melts away. The camera zooms in and we almost get to see through. The way the walls just melt away so we can see back to the barn behind the farm again. It's so visually amazing, the way it just looks so good.
You see these two horses grazing in front of the barn, and you have a conversation with Weaver asking about what's in the barn, but there's nothing really there, so the two horses are not supposed to be there. Maybe you're only seeing it. Maybe they don't exist.
Well, it's interesting because... Yeah, sorry, Andy, go on.
And then there was some sort of symbol or projection above the barn as well.
It had an S, didn't it?
Yeah, and it was just before we tried the TV there. There was also where we were talking about potentially theories on where it's going and what's happening. And up until this point, I was very much kind of going along the lines of, you know, either like a parallel universe or some sort of paranormal activity. And she said something along the lines of, her cousin, I can't remember which way around it was, but said something along the lines of her cousin's Shannon used to be the same age as her, but is older than her now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so you think, well, one's alive and one's dead.
One stopped aging. Yeah.
It felt a little bit obvious that.
Great.
I wondered.
that's the only one I got.
Same. Do you know what I mean, though? In a game that is very abstract, it felt, quite, I was thinking, are they really trying to tell us that? Because it just seemed a little bit too deliberate.
I took it as that and ran with it.
Yeah, so we all agree that Weaver is dead, right?
I think
Weaver is not there at that time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. because when she tells you about her cousin, she tells us again in these vague terms that it's somewhere up north, and you have to turn left at the artificial limb factory to find the bait shop, which is where Shannon has this workshop behind the bait shop, and then she just disappears. And if you I don't know whether you guys examine things around the room. So if you examine the stove is cold and full of dust.
Yep.
And so the sink is full of spider webs.
Yeah.
Clearly hasn't been used for a long time. So, leads you to believe straight away that Weaver was never really there.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But Joseph knew she'd be
there. So we head off.
But Joseph knew she'd be there. So that's interesting.
Yeah, Joseph knew she'd be there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what kind of plane do these people live on? So we leave the farmhouse, we head back down the hill, and then the highlight of the whole act for me occurs at this point. Into the foreground appear three people.
Yes.
And they start to sing. And they sing, what's the song called? We Walk Alone, or...
You've Got to Walk.
You've Got to Walk, and it's a funky little bluegrass ditty that I knew because I'd be listening to the soundtrack. And again, it was one of those drop the switch, sit back, close the eyes, and just listen to the song.
Yeah, it was also amazing. Very kind of, I was able to relax at this point because I realised that one of the band members, I think it might have been the double bass player, it was his silhouette. I'm pretty sure it was his silhouette that walked in front of the camera. And makes sense. I saw him sat there playing. And I said, oh, that's fine. They're sat here playing a nice piece of music. And that's all he was doing. He was just keeping an eye on me from a distance, just tuning up the band, waiting for me to come back.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very cool moment.
I love this. I totally wasn't expecting it because I hadn't listened to the soundtrack until I'd played the first act. I loved it. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, caught me by surprise as well.
Yeah. No, it's good. But and again, when you listen to the lyrics, very like religious.
Yeah.
Religion's like...
Yeah, it's a hymn.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Mm. Yeah, it's a kind of repurposed hymn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And all of the Bedquilt Ramblers songs are.
Yes. Okay. When I've listened to them in on the soundtrack, they're all very, very religious. And then, like I say, you just get this feeling there's death and loss in the game. It's all...
Yeah, it's spiritual, isn't it?
Yeah.
It feels very spiritual without being religious, yeah.
Yeah.
Would have been more soothing with some minor songs, I guess. But,
Yeah, well, some more folksy stuff.
Yeah. Well, minor songs becomes a huge thing later on, of course.
It does, Now, did Weaver tell us about the on-ramp in the mine? I don't think she does. I think she just tells us where Shannon's workshop is, doesn't she?
She tells us where Shannon's workshop is, but she also says that you just need to drive up the 65 and take a right or left, I forget, after the prosthetic limb factory. Then you can't miss the zero, she says.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
I went on a little bit of a ramble on this one. So, this is where I went back to the workshop again, and I ended up, and I went back to the oils. Equus oils. Mm. And there was a different character there now.
Yeah.
There's a
interesting.
Yeah, there's a character there with antlers.
Yep.
And he asked me. Really? You talked to him, and he asked me to go look him, help him. He's trying to do a gig. Trying to hold a gig, and I suggested holding one indoors. He says, no, it's got to be outdoors. And then I said, okay, I'll keep an eye out. And then that's it.
So I met him as well, because my first thought being done with this was, I don't want to go to Shannon right now. I want to go back and talk to to Joseph to figure out how on earth did he know that we were going to be there.
And Joseph wasn't there?
No, Joseph was there. Yeah, but you can't ask him that stuff, actually, if I recall correctly. But because the conversation kind of revolves around the other guy, I forget his name right now, the guy with the antlers. Who's trying to set up some kind of folk music concert, right?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So I didn't see that at all.
Really? Okay.
No, I haven't seen that either.
So that was an act in itself. So I'm beginning to think that a new act starts whenever you enter an area... Again, one of those graphical areas, because let's get into the other kind of areas now, because as you move along to Shannon's place, it would be natural that you you pass the museum, wouldn't it? Did you guys do that?
I didn't go in the museum.
Oh, I did. I did. So the museum is the first time I experienced the other kind of, deep narrative parts of this game that's not graphical at all. It's a text adventure game, but not in the classical sense that you have a text parser. You still have multiple choice, but you get to choose whether to walk down the hallway, try to open the door, touch stuff, look at stuff, and all of a sudden it's told on the map. You're still on the map, but just in a little window, a text window there.
Yeah,
and that is really, really well done as well. I had a huge smile on my face when I saw that this was going to be part of the game as well.
Yeah,
so you get into get into the museum, which is kind of an archive as well, and we get that gets to be important later on. You guys did get there as well. Yeah, good.
Yeah. I didn't find that on my first playthrough, but I found it on the second. So by that time, I'd already been to the mine, so I kind of knew about the archive and everything else. So it made a little bit more sense.
There's some good references in there when you get there, and it's funny because it's gated in the beginning. You get into this, you get through a door into a hallway, and it stops there. You can't get any further. But then you go back and talk to Joseph, and Joseph says, there's definitely something there. You just need to find the doors. Maybe you need to feel your way. And all of a sudden, when you go back there, you can touch the walls.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Then when you go back there, you can choose to touch the walls. You can choose to touch the ground. And then by touching the walls and walking along the walls, you find another door and you get to another room where you find, for example, his old research. You find Joseph's old research.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to play this again.
Oh, you haven't found that? There's some brilliant references there. No. We've got all the names like B. Sokal and I think Hal Barwood as well, or H. Barwood, and different adventure game creators listed there.
Oh, wow. So, man, that's amazing.
Mm. Oh, you haven't found that?
I had no idea.
Okay. Oh, that was a brilliant part. I love that. But that's you need to go there once, and then you need to go back and talk to Joseph, and that becomes another act again then. And then he tells you, I did this research. It should be there in the archive. And then he mentions the stuff about it's kind of hard to find, but maybe you can feel your way, and then that opens up some new possibilities there in the museum.
Wow.
Out of interest, Matt, do you know how many scenes you played altogether in Act 1?
10 or 11, I think.
So it must be lines. I only played 6.
Okay.
I only played 6.
I was definitely into the double digits, but only barely, so 10 or 11, maybe 12.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's there cool. That means maybe I've missed something as well, so now I want to play it again.
I never went back to the petrol station.
I've been there 3 times, I think, and new stuff happens every time.
And every time you go back, it's a new scene?
Yep.
Well, there we go. I had no idea. Literally no idea. And I've played it twice. Yeah. I've still not seen all this stuff. I need to play it again. Yeah. Well, that's brilliant. That is really good. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. I've seen the museum, but only seen half of it.
Yeah.
By the looks of it. So what I did, since I'm in control here, I can only talk about my own experience. So on the first time, I went and followed the vague directions and found a bait shop.
Yeah.
And this, it was my first experience of the text adventure, like scene, which I assume we all had. I assume we all went to the bait shop, did we?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
You need to, because you need to get Shannon to move the linear story.
You don't need to. Really? I'll come back to that. No, I'll come back to that in a second. Interesting. You don't need to. Yeah. So you don't need to. But in the bait shop, it's all quite weird. You find out that Shannon isn't there ultimately, but there's 3 fish tanks. And in one of those fish tanks, you can stick your hand into all 3 of them. And in one of them, you end up in a flashback scene, it seems.
Yep.
Where we don't know, but we find out later that Conway in his previous life was a roofer, wasn't he? He was a roofer, a roof repairman. And in this flashback scene, he says, I'm lying on my back. It's a text adventure, obviously. I'm lying on my back. And I'm looking up at the hot sun and somebody shouts or something like that. It's very short. It's a little window into what his life was like before.
Do you know why it happens?
I missed that.
It's because he gets electrocuted. So there's something hanging into the fish tank.
That's right. So, yeah. Yeah, it's the flex of, yeah, so, the flex
so,
on the
surface. So the guy in the shop says something along the lines of, you being a big idiot can get your hands out of that stuff.
Yeah. Mm. He does, yeah.
So I immediately stuck my hand down in all of those things because
exactly.
That's a game. You need to try it.
Yeah, because that's what you do. What did you guys think, the kind of non-adventure game players? I mean, what did you think about the fact that you weren't getting a graphical representation of all this stuff going on? I mean, did you think, I'm interested?
I think because it does a good job of describing it, then I think it works. Although it's very vague at times, it does it in these instances. It does a good job of describing all your that you see a hole in front of you. Do you put your hand into it? And it does it. Yeah. So it puts you there very well, like with the way it's all described. For me, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Similar. As long as the description is sufficient, then you're 90% of the way there anyway, aren't you? And you don't necessarily need to see it to see it, if you know what I mean. You can picture it just as well in your head as what you can on the screen if it's described well.
So we do find out that Shannon's left a note, hasn't she? That's how we know she's up at the mine. Is there a note on the workshop door that the guy reads?
Yes, I think there is.
There is something which leads us to the. I'm just looking for my note.
Is there?
Yes, there's a note on the door which leads us to the mine at this point and tells us that's where she's gone. So we know that's our next destination. But in my second playthrough, I just thought, I wonder if you could just go straight to the mine, and you can. And the game just carries on from there, which seems like it's a little bit of a gap, really, because you would have no way of knowing to go there.
So you would have...
But Shannon is there, just like she was.
You would have left the petrol station or the Equus Oils and gone straight to the mine? You'd missed the farm and everything, or...?
I did go to the farmhouse. Okay. So I went from the petrol station to the farmhouse and then went on a frolic over to the mine.
Okay.
And you can just pick up from there. You can skip the bait shop completely.
But that makes sense, I mean, story-wise as well. As long as you've been to the farmhouse, if you could go directly without going to farmhouse so you didn't know who Shannon was, it would be a bit of a miss. But
anyway, you can. Act 1, scene 3, as it was for me. Anyway, it probably might have been scene 43 for Max.
Probably scene 6 or something along those lines.
Yeah. But it was for me anyway. It was Act 1, scene 3. Elkhorn Valley, we're outside the mine. Nothing really happens, really. You just walk in.
So before you got here, did you frolic and have a look around the map?
Yeah.
So what did you find? You found a guitar player, for example.
Found a guitar player. I'd like to think I found everything other than obviously the second part of the museum. Yeah. Found a guitar player, the plane, the church, the diner. Mm.
The diner is weird. It's kind of like there's a love story wipe there. It's you go in, but there's no light really, and nobody can really see you. But this waitress is touching you, and you're leaning in, and all of a sudden you're gone again.
You're gone. Yeah,
really weird.
Did you find the crash site?
The crash? No, I didn't. Never found that
near the petrol station. Yeah. So you know, Joseph tells you, doesn't he, that there was a spillage on the I-65. Yeah, the
truck with some bottles.
And he said it made... Yeah, exactly. So you can, just south of the petrol station, you can find the crash site.
Oh, I didn't find that.
Not a lot happens, to be honest, but it is the crash site.
Yeah, but all of those little things just...
frolicking.
Yeah. All of those little things just add to the experience, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I love that they're there, and love that they're non-essential, that you can pick up as much as you want or as little as you want.
Yeah. Very little happens in any of these scenes. They are all little, just tiny vignettes. Mm. Nothing really happens, but it feels like a lot happens as well at the same time.
Yeah, so, it sets the mood.
Does set the mood. Act 1, scene 4. Elkhorn Mine. We're inside the mine. And the first thing we do is we walk in, and Shannon's on the phone. And all of a sudden, we are controlling this unbeknown to us before character's dialogue, which struck me straight away as being a little bit strange. We don't know what the other person's saying, but we have control over how Shannon responds to this person.
I love that. You have to make up the conversation yourself from the other end.
Yeah. You're imagining, aren't you, what the other person's saying?
I'm sure that the four of us have completely different conversations there in our heads.
Yeah. I took it that it was somebody who, probably a landlord of some kind, was demanding rent from her. And she was either talking to that person or somebody who knows that person, and she was trying to get out of it.
I had my tinfoil hat on, so for me it was somebody who was deeply involved in the whole thing with the mine that was trying to talk her away from actually investigating stuff there.
Interesting. Yeah.
I had something similar to you, Chris. I thought she was talking to her mum about financial troubles and her landlord.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. We talk to Shannon in the end, but we kind of, again, it's not a conventional conversation because I think you're still controlling Shannon's responses at this point, because you have to, when you approach Shannon, the prompt is stranger. And I think it's Shannon's prompt for Conway, which is really, really cool how he kind of shifts it on its head. It's not really clear whether you're Shannon or Conway. There's plenty of talk about, do you believe in ghosts here? And I think
she's Shannon says, surprised that you've seen Weaver, for example.
That's right. Yeah.
But not surprised enough. She's not like incredulous to it. She's just surprised that she was there.
Well, she's also seen her this evening, hasn't she? That evening.
Has she?
Yeah. I forget. She'd seen her as well. She's surprised that we'd also seen her.
Okay.
Yeah. So she says, I talked to Weaver earlier this morning myself. Or she talked to me. Difficult to know if she was listening, which is exactly the experience we had of talking to Weaver.
And the board game guys as well, of course.
And Weaver actually told her to come to the mine because she said she told Shannon that she'd find something that she'd been looking for. ... We don't really know what that is. We venture further into the mine. Shannon says, we talked to Shannon about Route Zero. I think Shannon says at one point, it's down here, the on-ramp is down here. We find out that there is apparently an entrance onto this road, which is, again, is fantastical in itself, that you'd have an on-ramp at the bottom of the mine.
It would be hard to get the truck down here.
Yes. But we're rolling with it. We're rolling with it. And Shannon's saying we need to get deeper in. But before we do that, we need to measure the topology of the mine, which she tells us is the science of continuous space. Now I have no idea whether topology is a thing, but it seems incredulous to me. We're testing the topology by it's a strange scene where she's asking us to make noise into a microphone.
Yeah.
And we're making these various noises as she's taking these measurements. And towards the end of that sequence, there is a mine collapse, and Conway gets trapped underneath. You guys had that?
Yes. Yeah. So he injures his leg, doesn't he?
But a lot happens before that, right? Or is that so we only get on the I forget. We only get on the mine card or whatever it is after that, of course. True. Yeah.
So we come round, and so we're at the entrance to the mine here, right, or close to the entrance, because she's taking the measurements about how you get deeper. The mine collapse happens, we're trapped in the rubble, we get out, we've hurt our leg. And now you have a few options here about how hurt you are. And you can say, I'm fine, or yeah, it hurts, or it hurts real bad. Now, I kind of hammed it up a little bit here, you know, because I'm a bloke. and this is what we do. And I was saying, oh yeah, it's really bad, my legs are messed.
So I went the other way because I'm a bloke and this is what we do. So I was just
I did everything possible to shrug it off because I thought maybe it'll have some effect on how you can move around or something. I want to be as mobile as possible. So I just had visions of my leg at 90 degrees or at 90 degrees at the knee or something to the my thigh, but saying, oh, it's fine, I'll just walk it off, it's no problem.
It's just a flesh wound.
Just a flesh wound. So did it have an impact then? So Mike Conway afterwards would limped everywhere.
He limped for a little while.
And I think basically you're trying to say that it's fine and she's saying it doesn't look fine and you say you'll be okay and she says you won't be okay. So I think she's just in denial.
She was giving me loads of sympathy, which is really good, which is exactly what I wanted. Which is great. But then we kind of come to and the game gives you back control and you're in a mine cart. Apparently very deep inside the mine and you need to try and find a way out. Now, again, this is one of the moments where I think you just have to go with it because at one point you're at the entrance, the mine collapse happens and now you're really deep.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah,
and you choose multiple ways, don't you, on this minecart of how to get out.
There is a lot to see here in this mine. I don't know how much of it you guys managed to uncover. Well,
Chris, you'll be proud of me here because this is a point where I think the game. I started to play the game the way it was maybe supposed to be played because, up until this point, it sounds as though I've missed quite a lot, or I've just kind of stuck to the main path. And I think it was quite quickly, I think is it initially where you start on the minecart, if you go back to the left, it takes you to the blockage. And if you go to the right, I think it just takes you to the exit. Yeah, so I think there's the option just to go straight back out.
Go straight out.
Yeah. And I was quite tempted and I actually thought, do you know what? Nope, I'm going back to that turntable and I'm going to go and explore all the options, which is what I did.
Yeah, I did the exact same thing. I actually started by going right and got to the exit and thought, nah, there's got to be more here. Got back and then explored all of the nooks and crannies of the mines.
Yeah.
And the same. And I thought, it was at that point where I realized this game's got me, unfortunately, for better or worse.
So did you guys see the ghost?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So if you, you'll be tempted to turn on your lamp, of course, when you're rummaging around or driving around the caves. But if you turn it off, then there's a tiny little lamp, little light that flashes when you're moving on the minecart.
On the tram.
And if you turn it off, then at certain points, there'll be ghosts or maybe visions into another dimension or whatever, wherever all of those other people from the city are, you can see them. Mm. And they'll be lighting up completely white on the background, but only for a fraction of a second. So it'll burn itself into your retinas for a second and then it's gone again. There was a horse at some point as well.
I didn't see
really.
I was driving around a lot with the light off, and
me too.
Just to sort of to see what would happen. And there was points where I was doing a full length of track with the lights off, and didn't see anything.
That's funny because they were everywhere, everywhere.
Yeah, same. I think.
Did anybody? I assumed spot the horse because there was a spectral horse as well at some point.
On a minute. What did you guys do with the dice?
So I kept the dice.
Jim?
I think I kept it as well.
Andy?
I put it back.
I put it back. That's why we didn't see the ghost. But
could be.
Shannon tells you that there was a mine. Did she tell you there was a mine collapse? Or there was they drowned. Sorry, they drowned.
There was a flood, wasn't there?
Yeah, yeah. So I assumed that all the ghosts that you're seeing.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Silhouettes.
They were the miners.
Yeah.
So Andy, that is it. That is exactly why we didn't see it because because
I had the lights off. I thought there was a very good chance because there's a point later on where you do kind of interact, and we'll come to it. But you do kind of have an interaction with something more supernatural. So especially on that point onwards, I had the lights off pretty much the whole time, just because the scene. That's not in any way related, but it just reminded me of the minecart sections in Donkey Kong Country. That was I was thinking about how annoying those levels were as I was driving backwards and forwards with the lights off. But so I had it off for the very large majority, if only because it gave a really nice graphical effect where you got the odd spark that would come on, that would, even with the lights off, you'd get the odd spark, and it would, like, and I just quite liked that effect, but didn't see anything by way of anything.
So I was driving boats, around horses, all tracks nothing. With and without the lights on to make sure I saw everything. But actually, the graphical effect, you say it's very nice. It actually annoyed me. I mean, it disturbed me in some way. It was hard for me to watch those flickers and flashes. Yeah. So.
The other note on that is that I thought the minecart itself was beautifully animated. It had so many different little moving parts in it, and then same with
and
the turntable.
Sound as well.
Yes, yeah, it was lovely. Mm. Yeah, I really liked this bit.
So good. We learned that there was a flood, as you've said, and the flood was the disaster didn't necessarily come from the flood, but it came from the fact that electricity and power is rationed in the mine, and they had to they didn't have enough electricity to allocate to the pumps, so they couldn't pump the flood water away from the mine, and therefore many miners died.
Yep.
And we do find out at some point, I can't remember exactly which point, that amongst the people who died was Shannon's parents.
And probably Weaver's parents because they were working down there recording the miners' songs.
That's right. Mm. Yeah, Weaver's parents were archivists. Mm. I get the impression that there's a class divide between Shannon and Weaver. Yep. So Shannon's parents, very working class down the mine. Weaver's parents, the archivist. There seems to be that disconnect between them.
Sorry to interrupt, but is this? Did you get dialogue later on about what happened to Weaver's parents?
I think that was outside the mine. When you go into the shack after this little bit, and there's books on the table inside the shack, the notebooks from.
Because I had a conversation where they said that basically Weaver's parents came and did their research and they just up sticks and left.
Yeah, you find out when you go into the shack, I'm sure there's something in the notebook where she says that Weaver's parents died down there as well.
Okay, or maybe it is. I must have missed that part then. Yeah.
Yeah,
two different paths there.
Yeah. The bit that you spoke about, Andy, I assume, was the bit where you find the tape player at the end of one of the tracks.
Yeah.
And if you turn your lights off, the bit where I found, if you turn your lights off, you hear like a static, almost like a record at the end of its, you know, where the needles reach the middle bit.
You hear them singing as well.
So you hear this but only when you're near the tape player, you hear the singing.
Sure.
Yeah.
I find this bit absolutely terrifying. I wrote a note here that said, it sounded like it could be best described as a man playing a kazoo whilst being burnt alive at the stake.
Okay.
It definitely has a ghostly quality, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was of mourning and wailing, and it's quite uncomfortable.
But there was a lot of suffering in these mines, so it's to be expected, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's funny, is it, like the way that the kind of different tracks are marked as well. I've done a few like mine trips, you know, as a tourist, and there's always like effigies and things that the miners stick down there to liven the place up or just to have as landmarks. Yeah. And I did find it really, I don't know, really evocative down there.
Mm.
I really enjoyed this section.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's really good. There's a few YouTubers that I've watched where they go down these abandoned mines and stuff.
Mm.
Yeah,
it is really, really. Yeah, I found this really, really good stuff down there. Well done. When we get to the exit, we have an option of, you have two options. Either you can have Conway's dialogue where he says, "I'll wait for you here," or you have a Weaver option where she says, "Wait for me here." Okay. Now, I chose Weaver's option. And I got an extra scene. It felt like an extra scene with Weaver exploring the part of the mine that you'd been to before, but where the track was broken on foot.
Yeah, I did that as well. Mm. I'm not sure which option
you guys
I chose,
that?
Though. But,
I didn't. She went off to have a look. I said, "I'll wait for you or something." So she went off.
Well.
I didn't see anything.
Did you not see that?
No, but one of you guys might be able to answer this, because it really annoyed me. Was it while you were sat there, while she went off, you initially had a blank screen. Well, you basically had your screen, and then after maybe about 20 seconds a prompt came up to allow you to interact with something, which was
the miner's helmets.
It was a bird cage. So, yeah, it came up with a prompt for Birdcage that allowed you to have a look at it. And
canaries.
Yes.
Yeah, because yeah, Weaver says, doesn't she, about her mum. Weaver says her mum liked canaries and her dad...
Yeah, it was something about along the lines of that. I think the initially, I can't remember what it was. It was something along the lines that they initially were just kind of quite hardworking, sort of financially savvy people. And it sounded as though the mining company found ways to sell things to them or something. Yes. I don't know. Yeah. There was something along those lines.
So it felt as if they were selling them tokens so that they could buy more oxygen or air down there. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I read the prompt on that, and then I was busy thinking about that, and then they came up with one for tape reels as well. And I didn't realize that it was time limited. So I was still thinking, and I was about to go and click on it when I was still thinking about the canaries, and the prompt disappeared very frustratingly. So I don't know what it would have said.
I've seen that. I went into the caves with Shannon, with Weaver. Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
And you find the helmets on the floor.
Mm. Oh, well, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is definitely a catastrophe that happened there, and there's also some animosity towards the owners of the mine, because they were kind of like selling stuff that they should be giving these miners, like extra fresh air or air purifiers or whatever. Yeah. They'd be earning these tokens, and then they could use them for probably canaries or these air cleaners or.
Yes, that'd be what this one related to as well. Then,
yeah. We don't find Route Zero. We don't find the on-ramp. We end up back outside the mine.
But Route Zero is not real. Shannon says, heard that in the beginning, so...
Yeah. Well, poor Conway still thinks it is. He's still trying to find it. Shannon suggests that we go find Weaver. Yep. Conway says, but what about Route Zero? And she says, well, look, let's just go and find Weaver, and then we'll go from there. We'll see what she says. Weaver appears to be the key to everything. Shannon says she's either going to be at the store, the bait shop, in the workshop, or she'll be back at the farmhouse. Yep. She's not at the bait shop.
No.
We do get a scene where we can go into the, again, a text adventure scene, text scene, where there's a small seed in Shannon's workshop with Shannon.
Chris, sorry to interrupt. I'm just realising that I maybe went off on a slightly different path here. I maybe got where you got the scenes with her going off into the mine. Did you just mention that when that finished, did you come back outside and is this with the shack with the notebooks?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. No, that's fine. Carry on.
Yeah, did you see that?
Yes. Yeah. No, that's fine. Yeah, no, my notes are maybe slightly out of sequence here, so that's fine. Yeah, no problems at all. Thank you.
Yeah. So we go to Weaver's farmhouse, back to Weaver's farmhouse. Act 1, scene 6 comes up, for me anyway, Marquez farmhouse. We walk up the hill, limp up the hill this time.
Yeah, it takes forever.
with his leg, which is, you know, he's in terrible pain, and it's basically dangling by a thread at this point, his leg.
No, okay, then there is a difference in what you choose, because mine wasn't at this point.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was limping, really. It takes a while for him to get up that hill.
I was limping, but weirdly, I chose all the options where it was like, oh yeah, no, I'm fine. My leg's fine.
I'm sure it didn't take that long. Okay.
Yeah, and then so did you collapse halfway up and Shannon comes and grabs you and supports you?
Yes.
This is when you get to the top. She mentions that the gravestone is just for effect.
Yeah, nobody dies. Yes. It's just decoration.
Yeah, decorative, she calls them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then she says, oh, the one for Marquez I thought was for my parents.
Yeah.
Which she seems to contradict herself. Because she says it's decorative, but then she says, but that one I thought was for my parents. So I thought that
commemorative grave would still be decorative, wouldn't it be?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, possibly. Again, I got a sinister vibe here, but I think maybe I've been playing too much Resident 7. I did get a sinister vibe here, but I think it is more in a commemorative sense. We head back up to the farmhouse. We get a bit more history of Weaver. Mm. Shannon tells us that their family would spend. They'd never had any income. They didn't have any money at all, but they got themselves into terrible debt when they built the house. It seemed like it's a really terrible situation for the family. Weaver woke up one day, checked the books, realised they had no money, they were broke, got in the car and left. And then nobody's seen her. Nobody had seen her since until that night when apparently she's come back. And Joseph had seen her, and we tell Shannon that Joseph had seen her. And Shannon's quite surprised by that somebody else had seen her apart from the two of them. She starts mending the TV and she's playing about with it. And then we get a scene where, again, we zoom in. The back of the farmhouse melts away. We see the barn again. It's very still. The horses have gone. It stays there, hangs there for a few seconds. And then we see a truck, presumably Conway's truck. I wasn't exactly sure.
Yeah, I assumed it was.
We see a truck driving into the barn. And that's it.
Yep.
End of Act 1. Wow.
So I can't wait to play Act 2.
No idea. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, my initial thoughts, I mean, we can go round. I mean, my initial thoughts were the first time it was over very quickly, but I didn't do hardly any of the optional stuff. My initial reaction was...
If this was scene 6 or 7 for you, I mean, this was 11 or 12 for me, definitely.
Okay. So I reckon it took me about 40 minutes first time.
And I took an hour and a half, I think.
Yeah. So it seemed like it was over very quickly. I felt like I'd loved the atmosphere and the general overall feeling of it, but I felt like some of the dialogue was almost deliberately trying to be vague and obtuse.
Yeah. That's how you feel when you watch a Lynch movie as well, isn't it?
I don't know whether it is. Sometimes I feel like Lynch movies are just vague and he's not really trying to be vague. It is just the way it comes out. Whereas I did feel a little bit that some of the dialogue was a little bit forced. Some of it landed really, really well. I think some of it just didn't, you know, I felt like, you know, I preferred if that wasn't there and you're just left with the aesthetic. So I was a bit mixed on the dialogue, but the aesthetic I loved. I'm definitely intrigued to see what happens next.
So funny thing is, I don't like David Lynch movies. I mean, I love Twin Peaks, and that's pretty much the only thing he made that I can watch, I think.
Blue Velvet, Mulholland Drive, No,
I've watched a few of his movies and always came away feeling stupid, feeling like, okay, I'm supposed to have understood something, but this was just 2 hours of nothing for me. So I'm just going to go over there and feel stupid with the other guys. So I love Twin Peaks. I really love Twin Peaks. And this had all of the Twin Peaks vibes for me. So for some reason, I loved the dialogue. I loved the weirdness of it. I just sucked it all in. But as I think we've talked about, offline or away from the recording, the mood you're in playing this is going to affect you hugely in a game like this. Yeah. I mean, you need to be ready to take this in. I mean, this is not something you play when you feel like some Twitch shooting or let's get the game on. I was playing this early morning with a cup of coffee in the cottage. The kids were sleeping. It was beautiful, just
peaceful.
Fit right into that time slot there, and my state of mind at that point in time, and that's kind of important with a game like this, because this is an experience more than it is a game. There's not a lot of game in here. It's like the walking simulators that we have these days. It is a story that you, an interactive story that's unfolding in front of you, and you can get as little or as much out of it as you put into it, really.
Yeah. Jim, what did you think? What were your kind of ended impressions as the truck rolled into the barn?
It's an intriguing game, isn't it?
Like
you said, Mads, you get, the more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. I've done a little bit of sort of frolicking where I've seen the guy with the antlers and stuff like that, but totally missed all of the museum stuff, missed all of that. I've seen the plane. So there's loads more that I've got to put into it. Whether that's going to explain the sort of main story beats. I doubt it. Like you say, they're all these very separate things that, seem to have nothing to do with the story. Maybe they do. Maybe they tie in later on. I don't know. I've got a theory. I think Conway is in some sort of in-between world. Maybe he's like trying to find his way to the afterlife or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think that's where it's possibly going. But
let's get the theories because I've got plenty of them. The one you just mentioned, that's definitely one of them. There's a sixth sense wipe of this as well. So definitely. But
what, that Conway's dead?
Yeah. Or there's also the slightly more obvious theory of something big and bad happened here. So we are thinking Silent Hill, like something big and bad happened in this mining city, like in Silent Hill. And all of the people working in the mine died, but for some reason their souls haven't left the place and are still haunting it. That's the more obvious ghost story you could have playing along here with it affecting the entire area, and the people like Joseph who live there have kind of gone crazy but also just kind of go with the flow and that's how it is here now.
I think as well, it is very vague, but that I was thinking, like, it is having just come off The Last of Us, where you're given this strong story straight away, really early. Yeah. You've got a purpose, and you're given it all straight away. I was reminding myself, look, this is the first act of five. It's going to be vague, and maybe that vagueness will wash away by the end. Or maybe whether it does or not, maybe it won't. Yeah.
I don't think it will.
Yeah, I've got a feeling it's not going to.
Yeah.
What about you, Andy? Thoughts, theories? Hypotheses?
I don't think I'm at that stage yet to be able to start making any sort of to be making any predictions as such. But I guess kind of the couple of things that I definitely think there's some mileage in what Jim's saying, that kind of he's in some sort of form of purgatory or limbo or something like that, where he's not really in one world or the other. Or, I mean, clearly, like, to me, the on-ramp is kind of, that's obviously allows you access it. The closest sort of thing I could think of that was similar to it was the likes of Stranger Things with the Upside Down, where you've got the real world, and then you've got this sort of alternate universe. It's almost a mirror of it, but, you know, it's there's kind of a supernatural element to it.
So if he's there, what's he delivering?
Well, so I think, interestingly, so I don't know if you guys got this in one of the notebooks when you were back in the shack there looking. This is where I was asking about it. So it's when Shannon's, she explains that her parents were miners and Weaver's parents were the archivists. And I thought there was something that she was talking about there. And I was wondering if there was some sort of, to me it felt, there was something that gave a hint that perhaps the mining company were doing or funding some sort of study about mining songs and productivity within the mines, and whether or not there's something it's almost like an unsolved crime that involves the mine company that won't allow all these people that were involved to move on until, so maybe Conway's there to, he doesn't know it yet, but he's there unwittingly to help solve this crime or mystery that allows them to move on. I don't know.
Interesting.
I like that.
But I haven't really posited any theories yet. I mean, I'd never got the whole Conway being dead vibe, but I mean, listening to you guys talking about it, it does make sense. I was more thinking of from the point of view that, you know, it's almost like a metaphor for life, isn't it? That we're all searching for Route Zero in one way, shape, or form, and it's the kind of it is the story of life, isn't it? That you're constantly aiming for something which is just that little bit out of reach. It's ambition. It's like a kind of a thing of ambition, is that your ambition is all about reaching for that next thing that's constantly out of reach, and that's what Route Zero is.
Yeah, I know, it's almost like your on-ramp, isn't it, where you think, if I can just get that, or if I just get that, I'll be happy, or you know, my life will be
and
complete,
and then the goalposts move again.
Yeah.
Plenty to ponder.
So you think he'll never get there?
I don't, it doesn't exist,
no,
does it?
I don't think so.
No, Route Zero. And it doesn't exist in real life, but Interstate 65 does. It goes all the way from Chicago right down south, thousands of miles of road. Only in America. Next time on Playthrough, we will play through the interlude, the first of the interludes that were released in the long deserts between releases of episodes. Actually, this wasn't too long. Act 2 came out, in May. We'll talk about it next time. But so it was only a few months between Act 1 and Act 2, but in between, shortly before Act 2 released, they did release this small interlude, which is called Limits and Something.
Okay.
So that is part of the package if you buy the complete edition. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I don't think it's really much. It's a interactive museum exhibition. So we'll talk about that, and then we will talk, obviously, about Act 2 next time. Yeah. And we'll see whether we'll start to test some of these theories. And I think in each episode, we'll kind of see, do our theories still hold up? Is there anything which has debunked them already?
Yeah. Are we, we've got to keep our theories, or can we bin them off?
Well, you can change them. Revise them. Sure, yeah,
you can. You're going to be changing them every single episode.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Andy and I were saying just in our break there as well that actually the review scores were strong for Act 1, kind of 80-ish, and about around the same for Act 2. But once it got to Act 3, 4, and 5, the game was getting kind of 8.5, 9 out of 10. And the episodes, I think, do become a little bit more fleshed out. They're all around an hour long, but there is more going on, I think, as we go through.
I can't wait to get into it.
It's going to be an interesting ride.
Mm-hmm. Great choice this, Chris.
Yeah, we are. Well, yeah, certainly got us thinking about stuff, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. And it's a game that I would, very much like Firewatch, it's a game that I would definitely, and Disco. There's no way I would have probably, this wouldn't have been on my radar to play. Mm. I did not have been for the podcast.
This is a much, much better way to play it as well, because I think had we done two or three episodes, it'd be too much, certainly for me, it'd be too much to process and to digest between each episode.
Yeah. Well, we've yammered on for almost 2 hours on just Act 1.
Yep.
Yes, there we go. Standard, hashtag standard.
Standard waffles.
Yeah.
Playthrough, broadening horizons and taking names. Gentlemen, until next week, we shall leave it there. See you next time.
We're off to the ramp.
Yeah, on to the on-ramp. Route Zero, here we come.
Hark the voice of Jesus calling. Jesus calling. Come and work for him today. The fearless one and the harvest falling. Yeah.